This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geek, show number 646 with Mark Robson, recorded on May 15th, 2025. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation. All for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. It's the best time of the year. May is the best month in Bellevue. Of course, we'll post the show with some real close show notes out at the AverageGuy.tv. Mark, is there a good month where you're at? Tell me again. Tell the listeners where you're located. Is there a good month that you kind of look forward to weather-wise?
May and September. May, June, and September.
And where are you again? Where do you close to?
Ottawa.
May and September. Okay, so yeah. Very similar to us.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, late June, it's getting warm. July, it's hot. August, it's stinking hot. So September again, starts to cool down a little bit. So right now and June is good.
Yeah. Yeah. May in Nebraska, there's nothing better. Flowers are out. Bugs haven't quite come out yet. When you think about grilling or barbecue or being outside or just sitting out there enjoying a cocktail, May's the month. The problem in Nebraska is we get the bugs are so bad because of the river that the later fall, you got to wait for that first real hard freeze to kind of knock down the bugs. So the fall isn't as great. I mean, it's okay. But the spring, April, May, just dynamite. We're in that season right now. So, of course, we'll post a show with a few world-class show notes out here at The Average Guy. TV. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers. If you are one of those, you can send me it supports it every single month. You can join us, theaverageguy.tv/Patreon. Then a big thanks to our affiliate users. If you head out to theaverageguy.tv upper right-hand corner, click on the affiliate link. It'll pass you through to Amazon, and that benefits the network. So appreciate you guys doing that. A couple of you did that last couple weeks and appreciate it as well. Big thanks to Gavin Campbell who joined us last week. And it's always good to have him on. And Mark, we talked a little bit about, you know, he upgraded 100 amps to 200 amps. You know, is that for you and your area? I mean, it seems to be real common with a lot of folks moving towards EV.
Vehicles. Oh, we already have 200 amps and any new home is a 200 amp home.
Okay. Yeah.
He's in Toronto, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So, Gavin, thanks for joining us last week as well. Well, you heard from him already. Mark Robson's joining me tonight. You know we're going to talk a little bit about food. So you better, if you're listening live, you might want to get a few snacks by you. If you're listening to the podcast, exactly. Stop it. Go eat, then come back. Mark, how are you? Good to see you.
Thank you. I'm pretty good.
Good to have you. I was looking at the, I think, I don't know what made me think of this first time we had you on. I think it was 2016, August 27th, 2016. Does that sound about right? Mike Howard.
Yeah.
Joined us in those days before we lost Mike.
And that was spawned by you seeing a conversation on the group, on the Facebook group about Mike and I talking about how many barbecues we had, and you couldn't believe, I think we had five between us at the time or six.
I think so. Mike was a big grill barbecue guy. And of course then, and I knew him really well. I didn't know you very well. And so that gave us the opportunity to connect. I think we did a few shows with both of you. And then of course we lost Mike during in 2020. And then you and I have continued. 1 year we've done two. I think most of the years we've done one, kind of a spring show that we talk about it. I look back to that show in 2016, just a sample of what we talked about. Rec-Tech, pellet smokers, bear claws, a meat smoking guide, bear can chicken gear, bear can chicken gear. Yeah.
Beer Instant, can.
Yeah. Beer can. Did I say bear? Beer.
Yeah.
Maybe I was thinking of Canada. The instant read thermometers, wireless thermometers, grill mats, which I still use a ton of today. And then that was Mike's, he brought some rubs, some other pieces to it. Your section, Acorn Grill, Weber Performer, Weber Smoky Mountain, Traeger Tailgater, Thermopen. So like not much has changed since then, right? I mean, still, that's a lot of that stuff's still out there, though, right?
It is. I don't have any of those anymore. I got rid of all those. And not just stopped. I just upgraded them or changed them out.
Yeah, yeah. Sold them?
Somebody yeah. Gave away my Acorn, sold, I think, everything else.
Okay.
The yeah. Acorn, I used it to the 90% of its life, and I gave it to a guy who gave me a really good deal on doing a laminate floor.
Oh, nice. Wow. Well, that's
and he's still using it.
Certainly a way to do it. Okay, let's get caught up with you from a grill perspective. So what do you got? What equipment do you have sitting on the back patio at this point?
I'm down to three.
Okay.
What? Plus.
What? Yeah. What?
What's down to three on? Plus
you okay?
My pizza.
You okay? Things are okay?
Down to three plus my pizza oven.
Okay.
So okay. Three so and a half.
Okay.
I have a Komodo Joe Big Joe, which is a 300-pound ceramic. Mm-hmm. I have my Rectech 680, which is a 680-square-inch pellet grill with a PID controller, Wi-Fi, and everything on it, with another 100 square inches of rack on top of that, and a 40-pound hopper. And then a grill I've been wanting forever, but I refused to pay the list price for it. I picked up in October, November. It's called a Yoder YS480.
Yoder, huh?
Yeah. And it is a 300-pound heavy built pellet grill.
What is it? You got a Rectech. What yeah. is it about this that's better than that?
Yoder was known for making smokers, offset smokers, before they ever got into the pellet grill. They were an offset smoker company that started making pellet grills, not a pellet grill company. That's exactly what I got.
Yeah.
So that little guy is 300 plus pounds.
Oh, it's a tank.
It's a tank. The lid, you can see the lid with the balance bar at the top there. Mm-hmm. That lid's about 35 or 40 pounds.
What's sticking up is a weighted balance, right? Yeah. That so when you lift it up, the lid's not so heavy.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you buy it new?
No.
That's okay. I was gonna say that's like a electric vehicle price kind of stuff there.
It was 12 years old. I bought it from a guy who was about 85 years old that was moving into a retirement home with his wife. I paid $1,000 for it.
Okay.
His daughter put it up in the market on Monday night. It was a miserable night. I said, I'll come see it tonight. I'll give you a deposit tonight. Like, I want it.
Wow.
And she said, no. She said, I'll hold off until tomorrow. And went and saw it the next day. And I looked at it. I'm like, yep, here you go. Here's $100 to hold it. And then went out on the weekend and picked it up. So it needs a little bit of a TLC. It's starting to rust a little bit. But
sure.
Like, it's heavy gauge metal. You can take the entire thing apart, refinish it, repaint it.
Where are they built?
Kansas, I think.
Oh. Okay.
It's that little plaque you can see on the front actually has a serial number on it. So I think mine is like 13,248.
And that's the number they've made, I'm assuming, right, at this point?
As of 2012. Yeah. So this guy used it twice a year to do ribs. And that was it.
Wow. Did it get covered? Do you know?
Oh, yeah. It came with a brand new cover. It came with a brand new winter cover. The winter cover is $600 Canadian, $500 Canadian.
Nice.
That's the newest version. So that's got a Wi-Fi controller on it. It's got, you might have heard of a company called Fireboard. Mm-hmm. They're one of the top Wi-Fi thermometers for barbecues and controllers. They actually have a fan kit for charcoal. So Yoder partnered with Fireboard to make their new controller, which is on that. So I can get that as a retrofit kit for mine. I think it's $600 US. So, and that gives you dual temperature probes, PID control. Just a more modern
PID. Remind me what PID controller is.
I always forget what the proportional, integral, and derivative.
It's the pellets.
It's the your oven has one. Anything with a heater has one. So basically, what it does is it tries to get you up to temperature and as close to that temperature as you can without as much floating on top of it.
Yeah. This is the burn box, I'm assuming.
Yeah, which is different from most of the other ones. So that's the edge that you see on the left-hand side there behind that part that drops down. That's the edge of the grill. So normally, like the Rectech, it puts into the middle of it.
Yeah.
The Traegers are put up sort of a foot into the middle of it. Yeah. This puts up completely on the left hand side, and
all the way to the left, right next to the hopper, basically.
Right next to the hopper, and it drops pellets into it. So it didn't. A lot of them feed pellets into the burn pot.
Yeah, the pellets come right above the burner.
Right. Where this thing actually drops them off a couple inches above it, so it follows. You can hear them falling into the burn pot all the time.
Yeah. So I'm assuming from a Wi-Fi perspective, you can monitor and change all these settings for it.
I can't right now because I have the old version.
You got the old one. But when you get the new one,
yes,
I'm assuming you'll be able to control all those pieces.
So my Rectech was the same thing. I bought it with the old one. The new controller was $100. This one, that controller is a $600 kit. So it's a new fan, new controller.
Is it this controller that we're looking at here on the on the screen? Yeah. $600. I mean, for some folks, that's a propane grill, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing on this thing. It's like buying a Mercedes or a BMW.
Yeah.
Once you buy it.
Right.
My wife bought a Jura coffee maker.
We have those at work. We have those at work. Yeah.
So we have one for home and then the milk frother, the craft that you put the milk in for it to suck it up was $50.
Yeah.
And she's complaining about it. I'm like, you have a Ferrari of a coffee maker. You're going to pay Ferrari pricing for the.
Actually, pretty cheap for that piece, to be honest.
Right? It was a glass jar with a little metal tube down the middle of it, and it was $50. Yeah. And she was complaining. I'm like,
oh, we have a full size because we have the big ones at work, right?
They bought
two of them for us. And so we have the full size craft. So it probably holds, I don't know, half a gallon of milk in there.
Yeah, no, this thing holds two cups.
Okay. $50 might be a little much.
But we've had it now for 3 years, and she uses it every day. So,
yeah, I love this Wi-Fi. The picture of the Wi-Fi antenna sticking out of the back there. It's funny that they put that on there. Have you ever had to place? We're looking at, we're looking at the burner here. Have you ever had to go in and replace the burner on?
Okay. So anybody who has a pellet grill. If you ever get your GFI popping when you try and fire it up, it's more than likely because your hot rod has failed.
Yeah.
And they'll actually eat through it. They'll actually get so hot that they actually eat through the metal on them.
How long would I expect? You know, I got this Pit Boss Austin XL that I love it. By the way, I love it. You know, we're looking at this Yoder and it's narrow. Like it's thick and narrow. I like to put a lot of beef jerky when, that's kind of been my specialty over the last year or so.
That's what I use the Rectech for, because that's 680 square inches, and I have jerky racks. I can do three high.
Yeah.
So I'll do like 6 pounds of jerky at once.
6 pounds? Mm-hmm. Man, I thought I was doing good with three. Nicely done.
And then I freeze it.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It freezes really well.
Jerky frozen, and then when you pull it out, do you take it out of the container that you froze it in to let it?
So what I do is I bring it to work. I leave it in the freezer at work, and when I want some, I pull it out, put it on a piece of paper towel, microwave it for 15 seconds because there's not a lot of moisture in it, and it's nice and warm, and pull apart But it freezes like. If I'm making 6 pounds myself, I won't eat that in the weekend.
No. Well, I mean, you could, but you shouldn't.
So I'll vacuum seal it into like 2 pound bags or 1 pound bag and toss it in the freezer and pull some out, leave some at work, leave some at home.
Yeah. The Austin XL has got 1,000, but that would include the top shelf. And I almost never put the top shelf in. So I probably
it's the same as a Rectech.
Yeah. Probably the same kind of thing. And comfortably I use 2 frog mats. I could probably put a third one in there, and I could probably do just on the bottom rack, maybe 3 pounds. And then in theory, you could probably put 2 more pounds on top if you want to do it that way. We just do 2 pounds at a time, between 2 and 3 pounds at a time. But Mark, I mean, that's the best thing you've ever added to my life, by the way, is making beef jerky fresh, because my granddaughter,
it's so much better.
She's 10. And every time she comes over, she says, "Grandpa Jim, do you have beef jerky? Is there beef jerky?" At first thing she says when she comes over. And so for her birthday and some other things, we make sure we've got fresh stuff. But sitting around the fire and being able, sometimes if I can time it just right, pulling that jerky off fresh, man, so good.
I went to a friend's cottage a few summers ago and I brought some up. and they have an annual, so Canada Day, so it's July 1st versus July 4th for you guys.
Yeah.
So he has a party every year, and every time this guy comes up, every time I come up, the guy's like, so you got any jerky with you? He had it once, and that was enough for him to.
No, right on. Hey, enhance my life a little bit more. So right now, beef jerky, we throw it in the bowl, slice it up, throw it in the bowl, put the marinade in it, let it go overnight. When I put it on, I'll just put regular black pepper on the top of it to kind of, you know, to season it. If what else, like this works well for me, but what else would you, any recommendations for me on what I could, you know, I'd lay it out on the frog mats, and then I just sprinkle, you know, sometimes I'll use the fresh grinder and just grind it over the top and let it sit for 6 or 7 or 8 hours or whatever. Any thoughts on seasoning?
I've always done the same recipe, modified, but I always do the same recipe. And it was from a site called Hey Grill Hay. And she has a Dr. Pepper jerky.
Oh.
Dr. Pepper jalapeno jerky. So I'll take her recipe and I'll put in some hot sauce into it, some like serious hot sauce into it. And then I take jalapenos and I dice them up. But the mistake I made the first time I made it was I was boiling it because you have to simmer it. So I was simmering it with the jalapenos in the house. My wife walked in and she almost fell over from the vapors. So she had to go upstairs to the bedroom. I had to bring her food because you couldn't breathe in the house.
Oh my gosh.
Because the peppers were boiling in the sauce. So now what I do is I chop up the peppers and I put them into the marinade unboiled and I just let them soak into the meat.
Yeah.
So I use her recipe. I think if I remember right, I take the salt out of her recipe and I replace it with steak spice.
Okay.
And I double the steak spice quantity. Steak so she spice. Calls for like four tablespoons. I'll say I'll put 8 tablespoons of Montreal steak spice in.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I'll have to try that. Straight steak spice.
Yeah.
Steak spice. Spice. There we go. Maybe a little too much whiskey.
And that with the reduced Dr. Pepper, because you got to reduce it down by half.
Okay.
And there's some other stuff in there. That I have to look at it again. With the pork, I'm going to try doing some pork jerky. I'm going to do it just a simple teriyaki to try it out with.
Okay.
And if it works, then I'll look at doing some other flavors too.
Yeah. Okay. I have to. You've mentioned that in years past, the Dr. Pepper. I have to look into that a little bit more. Sarah,
Dr. Pepper jalapeno jerky.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's tasty.
I've tried both teriyaki marinade and then, which is really good. And then, but lately I've been doing a honey bourbon barbecue marinade.
That'd be good too.
Also been very, very good. Yeah. Then just sprinkle a little salt. I'll have to mess with the spice a little bit more. The just regular black pepper brings it to a nice heat without it being kind of offensive. Jalapeno, of course, can get a little more, it can get a lot hotter.
Well, I put some serious, like some 100,000, 200,000 Scoville hot sauces into it too.
Yeah, that's a little too much for me. I like to enjoy it, not die.
It ends up being sharp is probably the best way of putting it. Like not burn your mouth off, but you got some heat to it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I've enjoyed pulling that off the grill fresh. Well, you got a fire pit going on, maybe some cocktails and a cigar. And I don't know if there's anything better than that,
pretty great. Nothing wrong with that. Like you out there, when I'm making it, I'm always going out and I'm like, yeah, not quite ready yet, but that was good.
You almost need a pound for just testing. Like,
which is why I make 6 pounds.
Yeah, no, right on. It's a good, one of the things I've found is, you know, of course, as you're slicing down that top round or you're slicing down the London broil, those are two easy cuts that are easy to get for the average guy, so to speak. You know, London broil, you can get at Walmart for $6 a pound. Sometimes your local butcher might be selling those things. They can't sell them in time. And so I've gotten them fairly inexpensive on, you know, hey, they're trying to push these things out. Like, let's move this stuff on. Just swing by, you know, the local grocery store. But slice that up. And then, of course, you have some awkward ends, right? And slice those down. And that's those are the tasting ends.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And throw those on at a spot. I kind of spread them out across the frog mats so I know, like, the various levels. The other thing I do, Mark, in the Austin XL that I have, it's hotter on one end than on the other, right? Even though the burn pit is in the middle, the left end is a little colder than the right end, right?
You got to rotate.
So I rotate. Yeah. And the frog mats make that super simple. Just pull that one out, slide the other one down, slide it on the other side, a couple hours, 3 hours maybe. But those little tidbits, those little morsels, those little ends, yep, so to speak, super tasty and a great way to test, right?
I picked up a Cuisinart slicer last year that I have to take out the box to do my jerky with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was going to do bacon with it.
I am close to a cutter. Like I hand cut them. So I freeze them, bring them out the night before, the next morning, pull them out. They're not quite frozen, but they're still pretty, because you don't want them solid.
No.
They're hard to cut solid, yeah, right? But an overnight in the fridge, cut them down, get them ever so thin. The one thing I'd like to do, and this is where your Cuisinart would come in handy, is get them more uniform.
Yeah.
You know?
And easier. You don't kill your, you're not killing your wrist trying to cut,
yeah,
6 pounds of frozen meat.
Well, 6 pounds. Two is not bad. I can usually get through that. I actually use a mitt to hold the meat because,
yeah,
the other hand gets pretty cold right after a while. Okay. Enough about beef jerky. What else have you been cooking lately that you want to talk about?
Oh, well, we did. Let's see if we can get this to work.
Yeah. Share it again. I'll bring it up on screen here.
Yeah. We did homemade pizzas a couple months ago.
And what's your brand? What's your pizza oven brand?
Uni.
Say it again.
Uni.
Uni. Okay.
Window. So my wife was, she wasn't sure about this one, but she says one of the nicest pizzas she's ever eaten. So that's.
And is this, what kind of pizza is this? Gas? Is it, are you doing wood pellet? Wood fire? Wood pellet.
Okay. It was one I picked up for $50 8 really? Years ago. Yeah. The guy was tired. He had it for sale for a couple $100. He got tired of people showing up and not realizing what it was.
Yeah.
So I reached out to the guy and I said, I'll take it. He goes, do you know what it is? I said, yeah, I've used it before. He says, okay, $50. So I showed up. He gave me the oven, the pizza oven, the carrying bag, and a bag of pellets.
Like $50.
$50.
And you've had Canadian. It 8 years.
Canadian. So what's that, like $35 US?
Yeah. I love that. Canadian.
So this was we have a chain up here called Metro, and they make actually a decent pizza dough. So we just go and buy their dough as a kit.
Okay.
So this was Metro pizza dough, burrata cheese, fig jam, prosciutto, and red onion.
Looks good to me.
It was a star pizza
oven. How long? Okay. So in some pizza ovens, you got to spin those around a little bit. Is that still the case on a pellet fire? So in 7 to 10 minutes or faster than that? Once you get
90 seconds.
Oh, okay. So you're 600 degrees in there, I'm assuming.
Actually, I got a temperature. Did that share or do I share again?
It shouldn't move. Okay. Yeah. Share again.
Window. Going to.
Let's turn that, put that in there. There we go. Oh, geez. 1,000 degrees.
1,000 degrees.
1,000 degrees in there. Holy. And that doesn't cook it too fast?
No.
Okay.
You turn it three times.
Yeah. Tony says in chat, you guys can start throwing stuff in chat. Also buy my dough from the store at Pizza Oven. It's a good way. I think it's a good way to do it. I mean, certainly... making your own, you know, during the pandemic, a lot of folks made sourdough, and making your own sourdough pizza crust, pretty delightful, right? I mean, that's a pretty tasty way to go. But for stuff like this, I've been so tempted. Solo makes a pizza oven.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the pizza oven craze kind of came and went. I mean, it's still there, but I've been thinking about picking up a pizza oven because that would be fun just to have out on the patio and
just look on Facebook.
Yeah, no, for sure.
All the stuff I have.
Yeah.
The three grills I have left and the pizza oven I bought all used. And I got wicked deals on all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good way to do it. What do you think? You know, the like Solo got into this space, and there are some, you know, for a while, all of these, you know, grill manufacturers doing it. Any thoughts today? If you were going to buy one today, any thoughts on what you'd go with?
It's all depends on how hardcore you want to get.
Okay.
It's like for me that the, for the couple times a year I use mine for $50 works out great. Right. It's, there was a guy, I can't, Barbecue Dad or Barbecue Daddy, something like that. He's a Facebook guy. He was tied in with Komodo Joe. Now he's tied in with, Big Green Egg, and he has an entire backyard of smokers, grills, and he does, he treats cooking like a, like an art form. Like it's, but it's gotta be actually more like science. Everything has to be precise. He has the, exactly, you do this and you do this and you do this to this temperature. And
is it this guy?
Yes. he is pretty, he's hardcore to the extreme. And I think he did a comparison one time of all the different ways to cook pizza in your backyard, including solo. So he's done complete articles on, on doing pizza.
He's got some Komodo Joe stuff that's out there. So
He just broke his relationship with Komodo Joe.
Really?
Yeah. He was with them for years.
Look at this, how to build a Komodo Joe station. Look at this thing. Like that
with dimensions and everything.
Yeah. That's hardcore right there.
I think he has five Komodos in his backyard.
Wow.
Plus some solo grills. And
James Mack is his name. If you're listening to the audio version of this, I think I searched smokingdadbarbecue.com. If you want to head out there and take a look at it, he's got an interesting, I mean, right here, look at this table that we're showing that's got room for two of them on it. Man, there's a lot of eating to do if you're cooking that much stuff. I wonder what, you know, for some of these YouTube guys, I wonder what they do. Like,
give
they
it away.
Cannot, yeah, I was going to say, they cannot. You kind of do that too, right? You make a ton of stuff and then you have folks over.
Or like, was it 2 years ago? 2 years ago, I did 42 pounds of pulled pork at once. 42 pounds of pork shoulders at once.
Oof,
and
42?
It was two pork shoulders, two 21-pound pork shoulders.
Wow.
And that only took up a third of my grill. Okay. Like, I got to put another four in there.
Yeah.
I pulled it all apart. My stepbrother just had a newborn, so we brought him 3 pounds. We have some good neighbors, so I gave them a pound and a half each. I brought some into work for my buddy and some friends of my buddy that I know well. And then I vacuum sealed some up for ourselves, and I think I vacuum sealed some up for the cottage. So it was pulled pork vacuum seals really well, and then just reheat it in water or reheat it in a cooler in hot water.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does freeze well. We always make a little bit more. I think I've picked this up from you. I've been doing pulled pork with a shoulder. Cut it down, and then we add ribs, and I've added loin. I've done a pork belly.
You're doing the whole pig.
Time to time. Yeah, it's a whole hog. Right?
Yeah.
And so you kind of just shop whatever's available. I just kinda, I've been going to the store like, what's on sale? You know, you pick it up, throw that all together. I think, Mark, the key, if I were to say the best piece of meat to do with pork shoulder, it's ribs for sure. And then let that, for me anyways, and then let that just sit in there with it and let it smoke low temperature all the way through. And when you can pull those ribs out, it's ready, right?
Back ribs or short ribs?
Baby back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Baby back. I don't like this. A lot of Kansas City people love this, the side ribs. And I find them too fatty.
Well,
a nice thick baby back, dry brine or dry rub, just salt, pepper, garlic, and lemon juice on it when you serve it
Yeah, I cut them in half and then throw the half or stack the half
into the pork shoulder.
Yeah, and I think I've been doing it shoulder bottom and the ribs on top and then the pork bellies on top of that, thinking the fat from the pork bellies would render through. I think that's actually wrong. I think I need to have pork belly on the bottom by the most of the heat to let that pork belly fat render out and let the shoulder on top with the fat on top render its way down in that stack, you know, kind of thinking about the meat stack that way. I think I need to flip it around and get the fattier stuff on the bottom. Because what I found is the pork belly that I could buy was cut in cubes, and maybe that's part of the problem, right? But
yes, yeah, the top I buy mine in the full.
If I could get a slab of it, but the part of it was it being on top, that fat wouldn't, and I'd be such at a low temperature, that fat wouldn't render like I wanted it to. It wasn't getting hot enough or the right temperature. Do you know, like, what's the right temp for fat to render? Do you know?
It's going to render between, well, it renders all the way up to like 200 plus, okay. But you got to get it to 160 probably that they're getting a lot of it out. Like if I look at my pork shoulder when I opened up in the morning, that's only getting to about 160. It hadn't dropped a lot of fat yet. By the time it hits the 203, it definitely got it. Because when my pork shoulder is done, it's lean.
Yeah, I may not be, I wonder, I may not be getting it hot enough.
What temperature do you cook it at?
200 or 225. It depends on the outside temperature.
250, 275.
Okay.
250 maybe the next, probably ideal.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I did like 8 hours at 225, and it just didn't, I wasn't as satisfied with the pork belly rendering as I thought I would. Ken has asked, how do you cook a pork belly?
It all depends on what you want to do with it. Yeah. We make something called it's an Asian pork belly salad. So we make a homemade peanut sauce. We buy the pork belly either in like the whole half, or we'll buy it in the strips. At Costco up here, you can buy it in like 1x1 strips. So the width of the pork belly in there 1x1. We season that with salt, pepper, garlic, and then we smoke it for about 6 or 7 hours on indirect. And then we'll cube that up.
What temp?
250, 275.
Yeah. I think I'm cooking too low.
Lower temperatures are good for smoking, but not as good for cooking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then we'll serve that on a bed of Asian noodles, coleslaw, like unflavored coleslaw, just a chopped cabbage, cilantro, the homemade peanut sauce. And we'll take some of the pork belly, dice it up a little bit, and pan fry it to make it really crispy, from like bacon bits, and then serve that with peanuts. And
sounds good.
We love doing that. We've also made some like banh mi bun style sandwiches before with pickled onions and pickled cucumbers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
For the pork belly.
Yeah.
But we always do it sort of 5 to 7 hours, basically looking at it. You don't want to get too crispy. You want to still be juicy.
Yeah.
But you want it to be cooked, then you want to cook anything higher than 165 is cooked. So, or you can make bacon out of it. So it's the same stuff to make bacon out of it. Just
same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're just getting in bigger chunks. One of the things, you taught me to do was smoke or cook the day before, then refrigerate it. And then the next day I just throw it in the crock pot, brine it or sauce it or whatever we're going to do with it. And bring it up to temp real slow again, and it's delicious. And we did that just a couple weeks ago for some event we were having. I did that pulled pork, did it on Saturday. Then we just threw it in the crock pot on Sunday and low, and just let it come up to temp, you know, by dinner, and it was great. Yeah,
I'm doing it now a week ahead of time. So we have a big family reunion every year, and instead of trying to do it on that weekend, making sure it's ready on time, because my pork shoulders are 17 hours to cook.
Yeah.
Oof. I put them on at 9 o'clock at night, and I cook them till 2 or 3 o'clock next day, and then let them rest for 4 or 5 hours and then pull them.
Yeah. That's the right way to do it. I got to start getting out ahead of it earlier.
So I'll do that the weekend before.
Right.
Vacuum seal it into 2 or 3 pound bags. The day of the party, I'll toss it into a cooler with a couple of kettles of hot water for an hour. In the Ziploc bags, pour onto a pan, and then there you go. Everybody can eat. But we never sauce ours because we have too many people. We make a Carolina sauce, and we have a Memphis sauce, like a darker, sweeter sauce. So we can't just do one. I love the Carolina. My wife hates it. So we do sauce afterwards.
Couple. It's a good way to do it. You were talking about the pizza oven. How long, you know, to get 1,000 degrees in there? How, like,
15 minutes.
If you're going to cook a couple, so do you think it's worth it for a couple pizzas to bring it up to that heat and then, you know,
15 minutes.
Okay. 90 seconds, you're done and you're eating pizza, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I've shown it to, I have a friend of mine, he's a winemaker down in Picton, which is about 3 hours from our place. He's a certified pizzaiolo from Naples. And I've showed him some of my pizzas, and he looks at me and goes, that looks like a good pizza. He says, that is a fantastic fantastically made home pizza.
Home pizza?
Yeah. And now he has two pizza ovens, and he's cooking his in a minute.
Wow.
Yeah, but he's running them at 1,200 degrees.
But come in, turn it on, get the pellets going, 15 minutes to 1,000 degrees or 900, let's say.
Yeah.
And you're ready to go.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we do. Say that again, Sarah. She's talking. Oh, she said she'd have to move it 5,000 feet from the house. No, it's insulated, right?
No. Oh, no, no.
Oh, no, they get pretty hot, huh?
Let's see if I have a picture of this.
Sarah's listening to the show through my speaking tonight as she's on the other side of the studio here cleaning something up, I think. But she's painting this week. So
that's what it looks like.
We'll add it to the hold on, let's get that in there. Okay.
So there's no insulation. It's okay. Stainless steel. The pellets go in the back, the smokestacks at the front. This is just when it's lighting, which is why it's got so much gray smoke. So it takes about 15 minutes to get completely hot. And then when you're done cooking, you have a little cap you put on top of it and let the thing burn out and
call it good. Yeah. I think those are good party. We used to have some, and it's not as popular now, but when this kind of stuff went through its face, folks would come around and you could have parties where then people would build their own personal pizzas. You could throw those in the, in the pit. We do. When we do pizza, we probably do three. So that'd be a good, fired up, get it going. And to be honest with you, it's probably no different. I spend about 15 minutes bringing my grill up to temp, scrape it down, get it all kind of cleaned up and ready to go. So at the 20 minute mark, then I'm throwing the meat on, right? Basically at that point. So it's really no different, right?
No. And this gives you a wood fired experience, right? It's a wood fired pizza.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
pellet fired, but yes.
Well, pellets are made of wood.
Right on. Yeah, no, I know. It's so convenient. Do you burn any special pellets for that, or do you have a certain flavor that you like for that?
I have never found the flavor of pellets makes much difference in the wood and the taste. Okay.
Whatever's cheap, or do you go for quality over price?
I'm almost out of the ones I had bought. There's a company up here that makes them just northwest of Toronto called Pitmaster Blend or Pitmaster's Pellets. Mm-hmm. And it's the guy that Dorian that started up this company, and he's been growing this thing massively. Mm. So I was buying from him. Costco now sells them because it's now a commodity. When pellet grills first started up, we were hunting for pellets. Now you go to Costco and they got them for a 40 pound bag is $20 now.
Yeah. I think I get it for 17 at Menards maybe. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was paying at one point, I was paying over $1 a pound. Mm. So, and the Costco pellets, from what I've read, are Pit Boss pellets.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're made in the same plant, just different bag.
Right. Yeah. And that's what Menards sells too. That's what I get, Pit Boss stuff. Yeah. No. Okay. So you don't think the flavor of the pellet matters?
No. Personally, I have never been able to find that they smell great. When I got some beautiful ones from a company in the States called Lumberjack makes pellets, and they had some really nice blends, and you can smell the difference in the smoke, but I never found a difference in the taste. I never found I could actually taste what I was cooking on the meat.
That's where like the whole experience of being outside, cocktails. And if you have Dave McCabe sold me a little cocktail smoker. And then cigars, that whole experience together while all that's going on, it's pretty great.
Now there is, you do have to be careful. Things like mesquite pellets are really strong.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to use mesquite with something like a big red meat, like a big steak. But all the fruit woods, I can't tell the difference between any of the fruit woods.
Competition blend. That's what I get every time. That'd be fine. Yeah. That's kind of what I do too. And I've done mesquite and it smells, like you said, it smells good. I'm not sure I can necessarily taste it.
Yeah.
Flavor. Okay. What else? What else you got? What else you been cooking?
This one was one I dug through the freezer last year. Let's see if I share it, if it'll actually go through as I cycle through the pictures.
Yeah, I think it will.
So this was a set of beef ribs but the thin ones. So I've been able to get some really big, thick plate ribs. So they're like a steak on the back of a bone. These were my first attempt at buying beef ribs, and they were really, really thin. And I wasn't real happy with them the first time I made them. So I tried experimenting with them. So this was after they were cooked, and they were beer braised beef ribs. So I smoked them to that point, then wrapped them in foil with some beer in it and sealed them up to try and get as much moisture into it as I could. And then it's kind of hard to eat that. So then we made a sandwich with provolone, fresh pickled onions, and that beef all chopped up. So I pulled all the beef off the ribs and chopped it all up and then made sandwiches out of it. And that was good. That was a really, really good
meal. Those bones pull right out for you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
On those ones they did. Well, and braising helps with that too.
Right, for sure. Yeah.
I'll back up to the beginning of this one too. So Cave Manning, I think we talked about before.
Yep. Yep.
So cooking steaks right on the coals. That is in my my Komodo Joe, Big Joe.
Which is super counterintuitive, by the way. You think they're gonna get like
flared up and everything.
Or like charcoal stuff on them.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't really happen.
No. I just watched Alton Brown do this, and he said the charcoal, the dust from the charcoal with the juice from the steak makes a gravy on it. doesn't taste ashy or anything. It tastes right. Delicious.
Yeah.
So that was reverse seared. So that was the prime rib I was smoking. And then that's it sitting on the grill. And I think
you got to watch the video. If you're listening to the audio, you got to come over and watch the video for this. I'm salivating watching that right now, that steak cook on there. Oh my God.
And that's over 1,000 degrees on the coals.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. How long do you leave it on the coals?
Only like a minute.
Minute?
Yeah.
Minute? Okay.
Yeah. The only downside with this one is you can see a string on it. The string burnt off.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things, Mark, I've been using my Apple Watch for is just to set those timers. That's super convenient. You're out there. You can turn your hand in and say, "Hey Siri, set a timer for a minute or for 2 minutes." I'm sorry. I just set people's watches off. Sorry about that. I set mine off at the same time. But it's a good that has been a really good tool to have. I know some folks have timers out by their grill and some of those kinds of things, but boy, that works really well to get those. And then you can go into the timer settings, and it's got all kinds of, it's got the most common timers that you've used there, and you just kind of click on those. That's been super helpful. Another thing you have taught me is cooking to time, right?
Temperature.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but yes, temperature, right? But there's some time components to it of, for me, checking it every, I use the timer to kind of check it every so often to make sure it's getting to temperature. Right?
Yeah.
Your point, right? And so the timers have been helpful to me. Otherwise, without a timer, I check it too soon or I don't check it soon enough, kind of deal.
I end up sitting on the back patio on the chair, timer going off. Our timer's set, and then just play a game on my phone until it's. So then you're not right. Consciously saying, "I'm gonna go check it. I'm gonna check it."
Yeah, yeah, no, I don't.
This is another one that we did. We tried it a couple times last summer. So smoked cream cheese.
Oh.
This one was with a sweet rub that we then served with red pepper jelly. And this one was dill pickle rub. So Clubhouse dill pickle rub that we actually served with dill pickle slices on crackers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I did those.
Temp. What's the temp? And
250 is 275 for, okay. I think, 90 minutes.
Ooh, that warm, huh? For those? Yeah. Like it didn't melt?
No. In there at all? That's when it's done. Like these are both when it's done.
Yeah.
It's separated on the cracks. And we took those to the cottage. So I actually made them up. Put them into a Tupperware container, brought them to the cottage, and then reheated them a little bit in the barbecue, I think, when I got there, just to try and get them a little warmer again, and then serve them.
Could you, in theory, so say like I wanted to make this kind of simple, take a cream cheese, put some kind of flavor, whatever you want, whatever you're thinking about, put that in the smoker, give it some time in there, and then bring it out, and you just take crackers, different.
Oh, yeah.
flavors of crackers and just come right off the cream cheese. And
if you do it right, it's just soft and yeah, it's just like a dip. It's like a semi-firm dip.
Kind of thinking like a taco cream cheese dip would be.
There's, if you look at smoked cream cheese recipes, there's all sorts of stuff. People are putting bacon on top of it, bacon crumbles, and they're putting, they're making Mexican versions, they're making Italian versions, they're making.
Yeah.
And that's why we had two of them, because we had different flavors to try.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And the last picture I got is we had a friend over that, she's a meatitarian. She can't eat veggies. She has a reaction to them.
What? That's a thing? Really? Oh, yeah.
Anything with a skin, she has a bad reaction to.
Oh, my gosh.
And I didn't realize it, but I made these jalapeno poppers. And she had never had them before. This is the first time she came over for dinner. And these are shotgun shells around them. And I made 8 jalapeno poppers. But because those are slow smoked, she had no problem eating them. She didn't have any reaction to them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Because those things, when you do those right, they just end up melting. Like they're just delicious.
How long? Okay, so jalapeno in the center. You're wrapping it with what?
Bacon.
Bacon. And then anything else?
So you core it and you stuff it with, I've done a bunch of cheese. Different things over the years, but cream cheese, cheddar cheese, and spices.
Okay.
I put turkey sausage in before. I was talking to somebody the other day about one of the favorite ones I ever did was plain cream cheese, and I had gotten flattened steak. I can't remember where I got the steak from. It was a cheap piece of steak. So I pounded it flat, and then I wrapped it in pounded flat steak, and then put steak seasoning on it.
Oh.
And those are some of the best ones I ever did. Instead of using bacon, I used this flattened beef.
Yeah.
That was delicious.
Yeah.
Somebody said try peanut butter and chocolate. So I tried that, and it wasn't my favorite.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But so I have a friend of mine who fills these up with sausage meat and cream cheese.
Oh, yeah.
And then wraps them in bacon. So these are always, they're a bit of a pain to make, but they're always a hit.
Like they're kind of finicky. We make, it's a Filipino egg roll. What do they call those?
Spring rolls?
Tilapia? No. Something. Anyways, there you gotta cut a bunch of stuff small. You got to mix it together. You got to fill them up. You got to wrap them tight. But we deep fry them, and then they lumpia. There we go. Sarah just shouted at me from the other room. Lumpia is what it is. And man, those come off the grill. They do not, or not, they come off the deep fryer. Last. Yeah. The deep fryer.
Yeah.
They don't last. Like they're pretty much gone. We made a whole bunch. There were like 2 left at the end of the night. I could see deep frying this same kind of thing, right? Throwing that in there and putting
this thing in there. I learned over the years. I used to make these, so I would have been 4 peppers used to make 4 poppers. I used to do like I used to reassemble them, and now I'm like, yeah, no. So now I cut them in half, fill them up, wrap them with the cream cheese, and Ken's asking about a replacement for the Maverick. I'd probably look at Inkbird. I have an instant read thermometer from Inkbird that has Bluetooth on it and 2 remote probes. So if you want to use it as an instant read, you can use it. And if you put it put it beside your barbecue, you can actually run the 2 probes into the barbecue to measure 2 meats while you're cooking.
Would you do something as opposed to a meter, because those are thinner probes? I mean, the meter probe is pretty thick.
It's also expensive.
It's true.
The Maverick he's talking about, they were like $25.
Just probes. Regular probes. Yeah.
So the Inkbird I have, I use it when I go to the cottage. So we rent a cottage. I bring this one probe up that lets me do instant read and cooking read. Mm-hmm. And it was like $45 Canadian or something. Mm-hmm. But they seem to be a replacement for Mavericks. Like they have a bunch of different ones.
Inkbird, is that what you said? Okay, Inkbird. I think I've seen those.
I have 3 or 4 of them.
Yeah. Tony says those what you were showing earlier. Those are really good the next day cold.
Which ones, Tony? The poppers, or the shotgun shells?
The poppers, I think, is what he was referring to.
That was the other thing I was showing, was that the shotgun shells, but we took it down.
Put it back up. You can throw it back up if you want.
these are something that people, they were, barbecue's got a bit of a, it's got trends just like anything else. So for a while, everybody's talking about, oh, these shotgun shells are fantastic. I tried them. I didn't like them enough to try them again. The, so it's stuffed with, it's manicotti shells stuffed with, pork and ground beef.
Yeah.
Wrapped in bacon, have a rub on them, and then just smoked.
Yeah.
And the pasta gets cooked from the meat on the inside and the bacon on the outside, but it was, it was okay, but it wasn't enough for me to, it was a lot of work. It was more work to do those than it was to do the jalapeno.
It's a lot of work to stuff those.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Especially with a meat that doesn't, it's not like a cheese. It's not like soft, right? It's, you're working with a thicker material. Mm-hmm. And I didn't find the flavor fantastic. There's a lot of other things I've made that were better than that.
You know, that kind of reminds me, we really enjoy it. Sarah doesn't like it, so we don't do it as often, but bacon wrapped asparagus. And I'm kind of wondering if I shouldn't be throwing a little cream cheese in that, right? So a little dollop of cream cheese in there and then wrapping that asparagus in that. One of the things I've noticed about that, Mark, is the bacon really steams that asparagus in a special kind of way. Like when you normally you'd bake asparagus or whatever, it kind of dries out. It's okay. It's not bad. But man, when you bacon wrap it and you pull that bacon off, that asparagus just steams out. I'll have to maybe think about throwing a little cheese in there to, you know, or a little cream cheese to.
Have you ever heard of smoothing that out? Cream of balsamic?
No. Mm-mm, no.
It's a thicker balsamic. It's almost like a balsamic syrup.
Yeah.
So those asparagus spears wrapped in bacon, drizzled with cream balsamic are.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are really, really good.
Yeah, that would be tasty.
There's a company called Nona's up here that sells it. And it's balsamic syrup almost.
Yeah. Have you ever drizzled a little honey on that?
I haven't on those, but I have on my, I've made candied bacon before.
Yeah.
Put it on that. And I've also put it on the cream cheese. I think when I did the sweet one, I think I brushed maple syrup on it.
Okay.
Because maple syrup's a thinner.
You just got that. It was just available in the gutters, right? You just grabbed some.
Given the top. It's easier to use maple syrup because it's got a thinner texture, thinner consistency. Yeah. So it's easier to do, if you're trying to spread it on something that's soft like cream cheese, it's easier to put that on. Cheese. I put it when I smoked cheese, I drizzled maple syrup on the smoked cheese before I smoked it.
What kind of cheese? Just cream cheese?
I think the last time I did it, I did 10 different types at once.
Oh.
I think I did 25 pounds of cheese.
Oh my gosh. It is something I need to try. I have not smoked cheese yet.
But and we had some in our fridge last year from 2 years ago when we opened it up and it was still good.
Really? So once you smoked it, what do you use to, how do you package it?
Vacuum seal.
In the fridge. Just vacuum seal it.
Yeah. Okay. So what I do, I don't have any pictures this time, but what I do is I'll take a picture. I'll lay out all my different cheeses because I'll go and buy 6 different types. And I'll use toothpicks to differentiate them. So some of them have no toothpicks, some have one toothpick, some have two toothpicks, some have one broken toothpick, and some have two broken toothpicks. So that gives me 6 different, so I can go backwards afterwards and track it.
That makes sense.
And then when you're smoking, you leave the toothpicks in it. And then when you're packaging it, you write on it, okay, we know that was Gouda, we know that was extra old cheddar, we know that was, and I think I did that, I think I put maple on the extra old cheddar when I smoked it.
Then
I let it sit on the counter for a couple hours to try and dry out a little bit.
Yeah.
Then vacuum seal it and you don't touch it for 6 weeks.
Okay.
But you got to do it when it's cool.
Right.
Like right now, it's almost too warm to do it again. It's
too warm. Yeah. You got to get that in the fall or
in the spring.
Right.
Or winter. Spring.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you said Gouda. That'd be a perfect, don't you think that's kind of the perfect smoking cheese? Just some Gouda?
That's one of them for sure. A good smoked cheddar is very good though, too.
Yeah.
And I did one last year called Compte, Compte. It's a hard British cheese.
Okay.
And that was good.
That was good?
Oh, yeah.
Man.
You can't really go wrong, right? You just play around with stuff. And if it doesn't work, you don't tell anybody.
He's like, I didn't do it.
No, I didn't. I don't know what you're talking about.
You for a while, you on Facebook, I was watching your neighbors. You'd be like, hey, I'm smoking this. And then they'd be like, can I come over? can I do that?
I was talking to somebody the other day who just bought a pellet grill on our street. And I said, well, if you're smelling smoking on our street, it's probably me. He goes, oh, we know it was coming from you. And he's like 8-10 houses away. But he walks his dog and he smells it every time he goes around the corner.
Yeah. My neighbors, the other day I was out, we had a neighborhood, our neighborhood's getting pretty tight. And I had one of the neighbors the other day say, hey, what are you doing up there? Like, cause we're up the hill from him. It's like, what are you doing up there? You got to stop doing that. It smells way too good when you're doing that kind of stuff. Justin Simmons out in chat says, yeah, me as well. Tony said he's getting hungry during the show. Justin said, me as well. I have a lunch meeting in 56 minutes. He's in Australia and they only serve commercial crap. So yeah. Yeah. Justin, sorry. Sorry. We're getting you hungry. This is what we do
once a year, Justin.
Yeah. This is what we do once a year to get caught up. Hey, Mark, from a tech perspective, right? I mean, listen, grills have come a light year ahead of where they were 10 or 15 years ago. From a technology perspective, right? They're all Wi-Fi connected. We've got tons of temperature probes in them. We've got all kinds of insulation or tech or whatever. I mean, they're just built so much better. In some cases, I mean, you can still buy the cheap grills at Walmart or whatever, your big box store, and get...
It's like any hobby.
Yeah, you can still get a $150 grill that's going to last you like a year or whatever. As you look ahead on grill or barbecue tech, anything you're seeing that from a new technology perspective, that's interesting.
There's two ways I can look at that. One is I still drive a manual car because I like shifting gears.
Yeah.
And I still like driving a bike because it still has gears in it. So you could implement AI into automatically figuring out when to cook stuff, when to start stuff, what temperature to cook at to finish up what you want to do. And the meter kind of does some of that through algorithms. So it'd be like the next step. But part of it is I'm already cheating by going with a pellet grill, so to speak, because I don't have to tend to fire like an offset. But it's not cheating to the point. I'm still having to have my own inputs into it. So I set my RecTech up to do pulled pork overnight. This is my winter. That's my winter cooking area. So that's a hardtop gazebo with a tarp that goes over top of it and gives me a window and a door. So I can leave my grill in there in the winter uncovered, not to worry about the weather if I can get myself into it. So I'll set that thing up overnight. That'll run. That hopper's got a 40-pound hopper, so it'll run for 40 hours on smoke. I let it on smoke, which is 180 overnight, so 9 o'clock at night till 6 a.m., and then I wake up, I look at my phone, I adjust the temperature from 180 to 250 for my phone. And then about 11 o'clock, I go out and look at it. So until that point, I haven't looked at the lid, lifted the lid in 14 hours. And I've adjusted the temperature. I know it's got dual meat probes. I know where the temperature is on it. It's that part of it I like. So that's just enough technology to make it easier to use. But I don't know if I'd want to go to the next step of, oh, your pork's going to be ready in 4 hours and 15 minutes because AI tell me it's gonna be ready.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I was thinking robots cooking the,
yeah.
I mean, you could put that in there and then program it and it would do its thing. Right.
Yeah. I still like to have some involvement in it. I am using the joke of the communities. They call them the easy bake ovens. The pellet grills are the easy bake ovens. Yeah. I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
I don't have the desire to sit beside an offset smoker and feed it wood for 12 hours and right. Stay up all night because you're yeah. feeding those things every 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
A couple more splits of wood and you have runaway when you open the door sometimes. And
could there be
for me is a nice mix because it's, I'm still adjusting the temperature. I'm not.
Yeah. 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 Could there be an alternative that has both pellet driven and then you also have the ability to feed it some wood if you want to?
Yeah, you know. there's a company called Smoke Daddy, I think it is, that actually makes a saddle that goes on top of your Pellet Grill, the Hot Pot channel. Like on yours, you have the I think your hot pot comes from the back, right? Your burn pot?
Oh, that's a good question. No, it comes from the side, but it's in the middle. It's in
the middle. The channel that goes along, there's a guy that makes a saddle that goes over top of that channel and holds wooden chunks. Okay. So you can actually do
the saddle on the
tunnel. Yeah.
On the
tunnel.
Okay. Okay.
So Justin's saying the same thing. He says people can't tell the difference. It's a mentality of, oh no, it's not real because it's not. If you're cooking right, you're cooking right. Right. You cook to certain temperatures, you cook at a certain temperature to a certain temperature.
Yeah.
With X amount of smoke, especially on the good smokers, you're going to get a lot of smoke out of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I use my Yoder, every time I lift the lid, I come back in the house, I smell the smoke.
Yeah.
Like that puts up more smoke than any other grill I've ever had.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah, she can't hear me, but she doesn't love a lot of the smoke. So I have to kind of tone it down when we're doing
our higher stuff. Temperatures will get rid of some of the smoke.
Yeah, for sure. No, for sure. Yeah. For sure. I almost never, I'm to a spot where the smoker gets, you know, pulled pork and those kinds of things. And then when I'm doing steaks, I'm just doing that on a regular grill. Just using gas for that. And that works great for me. My gas grill has cast iron grates on it. They're all seasoned. You know, I have rocks underneath them. Those are seasoned. Like, you know, it's getting some of that flavor out of those things. In fact, the other night, my gas grill caught fire from the drippings that were landing on the rocks. You know, it got hot enough, they caught fire. So I had to kind of pull everything off and wait 5 minutes for all that stuff to burn off. And of course,
I usually have a fire a year.
Yeah.
It's now, you don't even panic. I have baking soda in the my barbecue closet right beside the door.
Yeah.
I just get let a fire it burn up, out. I go grab it, toss it on.
I just let it burn out. Most of the time for me, I just let it burn out. You know, we do bacon wrapped sirloins from time to time, so that adds a lot of grease to it. You know, so I let it kind of build up, and then every once in a while it just catches fire, and you're like, okay, I'm gonna wait a second. It'll burn through. That's one of those things. Don't panic. Just leave the lid open. I can always tell when the temperature gauge goes to the all the way to the other side. You know, I think mine goes to 800 or something like that. And when it goes all the way to the other side, you're like, okay, my grill's on fire. I better open that thing up. Justin says, he says, I use a high intensity cold smoker, Aussie Smoke Bloke, more commonly known as the Smoke Eye or UFO smoker these days. Pellets really work well in those as well. Good, nice, consistent product. And this is really what pellets have brought to the industry, right, is a consistent burn.
Yeah.
Right. You can, with an auger and a little bit of smarts, doesn't take a lot, but a little bit of smarts from a temperature sensor somewhere, you can get some pretty consistent burn, right?
On that. I think Rectech just came out with a barbecue/smoker. So it looks like a gas grill, but it's run on pellets.
Yeah.
So you can smoke with it or you can do high heat searing like a regular barbecue.
I like to have both. I like to have a gas grill. I like to have a pellet grill. And then I could do to be honest with you, the XL is a little too big for grilling on the thing. It's really a better smoker because it's got so much space for me.
That's why I have two. I have the 480 that I use with the 480 is on the top deck and we use that weekly. And then my Komodo Joe is on top deck and then my overnight smoker is down below. Mm-hmm. So I only typically the Rectech usually only gets used if we're doing if we have a party, we'll do appetizers on it because all that room makes really nice when you're having a party. Or we do it for the long overnight smokes where I want the control, I want the alarming, I want the easy adjustability.
For me, my gas grill I bought in 94.
It doesn't owe you anything.
Right. I mean, it's such a good grill. It's a little Sunbeam. I've replaced the innards 1,000 times. I mean, every couple of years I do, you know, the burner. The current grates are maybe 10 years old, but I bought big cast iron grates that we're getting close. Like there's a few spots that have been worn down, have been burned down to just a little thin piece coming across.
Yeah.
I flip flop them from time and turn them around to kind of get some even burning. on the thing. But I love having both the option of gas and pellet now. And I think that's a pretty reasonable, I love your pellet burning pizza oven.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably something I got to think about here next. That would be a good one. Cause we'd probably do that more. You know, we do it in the oven. We do pizza stones.
Yep.
Which is great in the oven. That might work outside.
We did pizzas in the spring. So I have a summer car that when it's parked in the garage, I can't get to my pizza oven because the pizza oven's on the backside of on the shelf. So until the car goes out in the spring, I can't get to the oven. So we did it on my Komodo. I had the thing running for an hour and a half to get up to temperature where I wanted it.
And
it still took it 6 minutes to cook a pizza, 6 or 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Once I get the uni out, 90 seconds.
Yeah. Well, the whole indirect heat idea, right? That fire is coming up and going around and coming, dropping right down on the pizza.
Well, and I put in interlock stones and I raised my pizza. I have a Emile Henry pizza stone. So I raised that into the dome. I put a layer of interlock stones. I put stuff underneath that. So it's got a lot of thermal mass because what I want to do is when you open the lid up, you don't lose all the thermal mass.
Right. Yeah. And you want to get that crust crisp.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, oh, it's so good. I love crispy. I love, we've been doing a lot of Detroit style pizza, which, you know, square pan,
yep.
Put a lot of oil in it. It's kind of crispy on the edge.
Almost like a focaccia.
Yeah. No. Randy, sorry. Last week's show, I said a disparaging word towards Detroit. So Randy, I'm sorry about that, but I will say Detroit style pizza, the best by far. Super good. So that's a good way to do it. You got me thinking now, and maybe I need to watch Facebook for a.
That's the best place, I got my Yoder.
I know. You even found a grill for me.
Yeah, Weber.
I didn't buy it, but
yeah. I sold mine.
Did you?
Yeah.
I just don't know if I want to go charcoal at this point. As often as we grill, whatever that is, the gas is great. Like the other night. I came in, it was Sunday. We were making something. Sarah wanted some chicken. I'm like, you want me to grill that? She's like, yeah, the gas grill, put it on, fire it up, get it going, 15 minutes, ready to go. I can grill right on top of that. So that makes that impromptu grilling super easy. If I want to do a 10-hour smoke or I want to make beef jerky or I want to do some of those kinds of things, the pellet grill, but for sure, plan it out a little bit, put that stuff in there. I'll be honest with you. I have not had the guts to do an overnight thing yet. And that's my next mark. Maybe that's my next maturity level in the grilling or in the smoking space.
Or maybe not even overnight. Maybe just get up early and don't touch it for 8 hours.
Yeah. Well, I've done some shoulders for 6, 7, 8, but you've talked, like, hey, I'm doing this for 14 hours and you've put stuff on overnight and I still have not. I don't know. I need to. I don't trust it.
Get your alarms.
I need
to get your alarm set up.
Yeah, put it on at 10.
Yeah,
I get up at 6, and I have a. I think I have a 20 or 25 pound hopper, and in most cases, that's going to get me through the night. So
you shouldn't. You should typically. Well, my Rectech burns a pound an hour on smoke.
Yeah.
So I've gone through on a weekend, I've gone through with 40 pounds where I did, like we did ribs one day and then we did I think we did ribs and a pork shoulder in the same weekend. So do ribs one day, so fire the thing up at 8 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, do ribs for 7 hours. I think I turned it down to smoke, didn't even turn it off, just turned it down to smoke and then put the pork shoulder on at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah. It's the way to do it. And that's probably, the other night I did the pork shoulder first, ran that all day, shut it down. And the next morning fired it back up at 6, put the beef jerky on at 7. And then by 2 or 3, that was starting to get to its spot.
Yeah. I think last time I did a lot, which was when I had it with the brisket, I think I ran 2 consecutive 4-hour cooks and I filled my 680 square inches with 3 racks. Yeah. So I have, I got 6 racks total. So I think I did two batches of six racks total in my 680 square inch rack pellet grill. And I think it was 6 pounds cooked when I was done. And that was from 2 20-pound briskets.
I need to go eat some meat right now. Mark, as you look ahead, anything you got your eyes on future wise on grill stuff, or that like you would if the price was right, you'd pick it up?
I'm debating on whether or not I trade my Komodo Jumbo Joe, which is a massive one, for a regular size one, because it takes a lot of charcoal to get that 300-pound egg up to temperature.
Yeah. Really?
Oh yeah.
Those insulated? I mean, shouldn't that come up pretty fast? Oh, okay.
They're an inch of ceramic.
Oh, okay.
The steel ones are. So my Acorn was significantly better on charcoal, significantly more efficient than the Komodo eggs are. But it's also only two of us. So pretty much all I use it for is searing steaks and occasional cooking pizzas.
Right.
So I don't need to have the biggest jumbo one, especially now I got two pellet grills.
Yeah.
So the Yoder is my day-to-day one for anything from burgers, chicken wings, pork chops, whatever. And then if I do it overnight cooks, I do it on the Rectech.
Yeah. Well, here in the U.S., if you're not wanting to spend that kind of money, well, you can spend less money if you buy them used like Mark does, but you can also, Pit Boss has been another good brand that I've.
There's nothing wrong with Pit Boss.
No, that has played out nice. Cover was nice on it. Ken asks, Weber grill still solid? I may consider a gas grill. Would you thinking like, when I think of Weber, I think of charcoal, and man, it's so convenient on the gas side of things just to fire it up in 15 minutes. And the consistency that a gas grill brings for me, I can kind of predict where the levels are going to be. You know, once I get to know it, I know my gas grill. I've never felt that comfortable with a charcoal grill, right? Being able to get it there. I could be wrong. And maybe it's just a practice thing.
It's a practice thing. I had a Weber for, I'll answer Ken's question in a second, but
yeah.
I had a Weber. I bought a Napoleon charcoal grill. They just came out with them. It was absolute garbage. I don't know if they fixed them or not, but I actually returned it back to Home Depot because the temperature with the Acorn, I could set the temperature. If I wanted to be 250, I knew exactly where to put the dials. If I wanted to be 300, I knew exactly where to put the dials. The problem with the Acorn is it takes, there's a big buffer in between what you adjust the things and how the temperature reacts. If it goes too high, you're fighting with it forever to try and get the thing down. With the Weber, when I got it, I did the same stuff I did with the Acorn. And it was, you want 250, there's 250. You want 300, there's 300. Or you want 250 again, they're back to 250. Like it was great. The Napoleon had way too many air gaps. So you start a little fire in it and you close it right the way down and the thing would go up to 600 degrees. Mm. So it might've been the one I had. It might've been that they're all like that, but
yeah.
I got my Weber and never looked back and it was always a great one.
Okay.
Weber does have some nice stuff, but I think it's like anything. Weber and Napoleon are the two big ones up here. They both have discount brands and they both have premium brands, and you pay for the, you can tell what you're looking at from the price point.
That's really what it boils down to at the end of the day, right? Getting that right price point. And you're either going to pay that retail, you're going to pay midway probably for a lot of folks, or you're going to shop the Facebook or whatever that is for you. Looking for those deals, of course, you never know what you get when you do that kind of, right? That thing could be abused. Although, have you ever bought a grill that's been abused, or are they usually pretty well taken care of?
No. I'm selling one that's it's had some abuse, but it's just through use. Like it's my Broil King pellet is could do some TLC right now just because I burned like 1500 pounds of pellets through it. The stuff starts to fatigue after
having that many heat cycles. Sure. I need to go out and take my, you know, my mine apart and vacuum out all the, you know, it gets pretty ashy in there after a while. And you gotta, you know, with the smoker, you gotta kind of clear them out from time to time.
A couple of times a year, I try and do that.
Yeah. On the gas grill, I always use, you know, I replace the burner and then I get rocks and I like, you know, there's some cool flat rocks. They're manufactured. They got little holes in them. I've done that. I've done kind of lava rocks. I don't like those as much, but the flat rocks seem to work well. They last about two or three burners, and then I've got to replace those. So, you know, I can pick them up at Ace Hardware here.
They're consumables.
Yeah. And they get flavored. Those little rocks, they get super flavored. I mean, it's just stuff drips on them. It actually, I think, helps protect the burner a little bit. Of course, burners don't last forever. So the burners I replace the most often. The rocks are probably every two, three, four burners. And I'll be honest with you, with my Sunbeam, I just wait for burners to go on sale at Ace. You know, they'll be...
As long as you can still get them, right?
Yeah, for whatever reason, they'll be clearancing those things out in the maybe summer, spring, or whatever model, whatever. I've used both the single burner and the H burner style. It's okay. It works either way. Set the rocks. So burners are probably every couple years. And then the cast iron grate has been the best thing. That has probably lasted me 12 years, maybe 13. It's been the grate, buying the grate that fit that grill. Cast iron, I spent, Mark, it wasn't terrible. I mean, this was 12 years ago. It was probably $30.
That's good.
That I spent on the thing, and it's given me so much life. Those ones that you get with a cheap grill. Listen, my cheap grill that I bought in 94, it was $125 when I bought it in 94. Let's just be really clear. Like, it was, I've outfitted it with some pretty good gear, but that the grill itself, the top grate, was the most important thing. And getting a really beefy one, cast iron that fit that, man, that's been the best thing I've ever bought.
I've had the Broil King comes with cast iron grills, which is kind of strange on a smoker, but they sell it as a searing station as well.
Yeah.
That Pits and Spits he's talking about is a nice grill. Like, that's, you can't find those up here.
Yeah. Pits and Spits Maverick 1250 or a Yoder, depending on what I can get locally.
Yeah.
That's Justin.
Yeah. And Justin, the Yoder up here was $4,300.
Okay. Yeah.
Like the Yoder at the Canadian store up here.
$2,250 here in the US is what I just
saw. Yeah, no, we pay Canadian tax.
Yeah, for sure. It's US brand, right? Yoder is a US brand? Yeah.
I think they're made in Wichita, Kansas. $2,250 US, they're $3,800 Canadian.
Whew. Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I buy the upgrade kit, I'm actually going to go down to the States to buy it.
Yeah. It would be worth driving and then smuggling it over the border. I'll you should do that.
I'll pay the tax on it because it's made in the US, right? So there's no duty on it.
That's true.
It's 13% tax and you're done.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's going to save about $300.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's there's one importer.
You're coming through town and we'll grill. Yeah.
There's one importer for Yoder in Canada. And he adds about $1,000 onto every grill.
Mm,
So all the stores are selling for the same price and you can't buy one outside of a store. So when I saw that one for $1,000, I jumped on it. And it's, I'm trying to equate it to something else. There's maybe like an old guitar, like there's not a whole lot to go wrong with them.
Yeah.
They work or they don't work. If they don't work, there's not a whole lot to them. They're an RTD, a fan, and an auger, and that's it.
Yeah. Well built. I mean, this is a tank as you're looking at this. I mean, well built. And I'm sure, do they have their own covers?
Yes.
For them?
Yeah. They look funky because the cover, those racks at the front, the chrome racks at the front and the side, the cover covers them. So it's got all these little things jutting out everywhere.
I do not like the front cover on this Yoder that you're showing me. I don't like that Rex. I prefer to come right up to the grill. I don't need a front. The Sunbeam, I almost took off that front. You know, it's got like a front rack on it. It's got two side racks. I prefer the side racks.
I would have liked it if it folded down at the front, but those are all solid mounted.
Yeah, I'd almost take it off. Are they welded on there?
No, take them off? They just slide in and out.
Okay. Yeah, I'd almost take it off.
So for the winter, I actually removed them.
Yeah.
And then for the summer, I'm using them again because I'll go out there with a tray of ribs and I want to put them down somewhere so I can lift the ribs onto the.
Yeah. I use the hopper top as I shouldn't, but I use the hopper top as
that's my tongue sit.
As another tray. Yeah. Well, sometimes I'll put a piece of tinfoil down or whatever to make sure.
Now, the Rectech, I have a fold-out shelf, which is nice. So it's when I want to use it, it's there. And then when I'm not using it, I just fold the thing down.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. Mark, always great to have you on. Thanks for making us hungry. Appreciate your desire. It never gets old, right? I mean, every year we've been doing this since 2016.
Always something new.
And I think I did this for a couple years with Howard before I think he was on maybe twice before you came on to join us. We went back to 2016 at the beginning of the show. And I think Mike joined me as early as 2014. I'd have to go back and look on that to see how long we've been talking about this. You know, it's funny. The industry has come, you think about it, let's just say it's 10 years. It's come a long way. And yet a lot of the things are the same, you know.
The pellet grills didn't. Like, I got into them early in the, not going to say I'm an early adopter, but I was fairly early into the cycle. Like, the hardware stores up here had them, but nobody really knew about them.
Yeah.
And you paid for them. They were expensive. Now you can buy them at Costco. And, like, Costco will have a road show and stuff.
No, for sure.
Justin's asking about the Fireboard. The Fireboard is what Yoder's using for their controller, from what I've heard. It was, if not is, the best controller out there. I've had a couple of different PID controllers. I had one on my Acorn and it was great. And it was actually designed for a lab. Like, it was a PID controller to use in a laboratory. And then somebody realized that you can actually hook a little fan up to it and hook it up to a barbecue. And my wife got me that for my birthday one time. And I sold that. I think I sold it. I might still have it around somewhere. And I got another one with my Funky Mountain. And but I think any of those work well. Like, there's not a lot to them. My PID controller has been around in the industry for years. All modern pellet grills, most modern pellet grills have one built into it.
Yeah.
So Fireboard just makes a really nice product. I had a couple of friends that have them and they love them. And the Yoder, like I said, the basis for the Yoder controller, from what I've heard, is a Fireboard.
It's good. It's good. Listen, I've been happy with my Pit Boss. That seems to be like a mid level that you can get into. I spent $400 maybe on it. Maybe a little more expensive now. But
a buddy of mine bought one at Sarah's first year of COVID. Another a buddy of mine bought one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when I got mine too, right? It's 22, maybe 21.
20, and I think 21. His hot rod failed on him. So again, if you have your GFI pop, it's more than likely your hot rod because the grounding shot. And now his RTD, his temperature sensor, has failed. He said it goes up to 70 degrees and then turns off. And like, well, that sounds like it's probably the fact that it's doing its startup cycle. So it's going to ignore the temperature probe. And then when we want to rely on the temperature probe, it's getting an open circuit or something. So I said, you can buy the probes on Amazon for $20. Yeah. It's just another part that failed because it's going through heat cycles.
Right. Right.
So. It's not like it's a problem where it's an obsolete part you can't get stuff for. They typically use the same. Like, when my hot rod failed on my Rectech, everybody's like, well, you got to buy the Rectech hot rod. And like, I went to Amazon, I bought it, just tried it out, and it fit right in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good stuff, Mark. Appreciate it. Can you hang around as I kind of wrap this up? All right. Well, we won't do much of a post show, but a couple reminders. One, I need to go eat some beef jerky or something. I might head down to the store and pick some up. I don't have any in the freezer to just warm up in the microwave. So I'll have to go out and get that done. So Mark, thanks for joining us today. Couple reminders on the way out here. Next week we'll be live, but I'll be playing in an interview. Doug Milburn is going to join me. We're going to talk about hard drives. Like, I know it's been a while since we've spent any time talking about hard drives, but Doug Milburn is one of the co-founders of 45 Drives. Have you, Mark, heard of them? 45 Drives here in the US?
I just put 24 terabytes into my Unraid server a couple months ago. I look at his stuff for the details of which drives to stay away from.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back. Oh, so 45 drives.
45 drives.
Yeah. 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 So right. I'm thinking the Backblaze that has Backblaze. A report.
Backblaze has that.
No, 45 drives make some beautiful stuff.
They do make some great
equipment. They're Canadian too.
Yeah.
They're out of
Nova Scotia. Newfoundland, right? Out in that,
Yeah.
Aren't they out on the West Coast or out on the East Coast?
I think it's Nova Scotia.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I interviewed Doug a week ago or so on a Monday morning because that's when he was available. And so we'll be playing the interview with Doug in here next week. And come out and join me. I'll be in chat. It'll be live, I think. I think I can make all that work. And we'll be chatting along with it, but it'll be the interview that I did with Doug during that time. And it'll be kind of fun. Uyghur is, in theory, he's been talking about buying a chassis from them and building that out. They have a Home Labs kind of section in their site. They're talking a lot about counterfeit drives.
15 drives.
Yeah. They've been talking. He's been worried about the kind of the counterfeit, you know, these enterprise drives are pretty expensive. And then, of course, some folks have been taking the enterprise drives that have 20 or 30,000 hours on them, slapping a new label and selling, you know, deleting the smart data and selling them as new. So we talked to Doug about that. If you're an old home server guy, you got to listen to this interview. Next week on Thursday, it'll be available through the channels. I'll publish it as a podcast. But that's next week. TJ Huddleston is joining me, hometech.fm. That's HA or Home Assistant Day in Columbus. We're going to talk a little bit about that when he's coming in. Of course, I've had TJ on before, and so you want to come out. We'll talk a lot about Home Assistant, some of the things that he's done there. Schoonover is joining me on the 5th of June, and we'll catch up with him and a little some of the stuff he's doing. And then Uyghur, we had a misscheduling a couple weeks ago. Uyghur will be back on the 12th, and then Dave Hamilton from Mac Geek Gab will be joining us here on the 26th. So come out. If you're listening to the podcast, we'd love to have you join us live. Appreciate that, folks. Tony, Justin, Ken was out here a little bit earlier. Brian checking in, listening to us live tonight. Come out and join us on a Thursday night. Super fun. We are going live Thursdays now, 7 p.m. Central. So maybe in the past it was a little too late for you. It's no longer late for you. 7 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out here at theaverageguy.tv/live. Mark sends me a note. 24 terabytes in your Unraid box, Mark?
That's what I added.
You added to what? What did you have before?
22.
So you have 44?
40. I think I'm at 40. I'll double check right now.
Nice. 8 terabyte drives. Listen, 8 and 10 terabyte drives, sweet spot right now in price. Although I would hold off. The prices with the tariffs here in the United States, prices increased by 30 or 40 or 50%, depending where you're buying them. But hopefully you got those before things. Well, you're in Canada, so you're fine.
Well, I bought them from the States. I bought them from Server Part Deals.
Okay. Okay.
I'm at 48 terabytes now.
Nice. So
I swapped out three terabyte drives that were full.
Okay.
For three more 8 terabyte drives.
8 terabyte drives. Yeah. Yeah. Not good. Yeah. Not nice. Nice work. I've got a bunch of 3 and 4 terabyte drives I'm doing the Chia mining with. I've got some 8 terabyte drives. I just bought some 10 terabyte drives. I'm thinking of, there's a hard drive manufacturer. Let's see if I can, they just showed up on Amazon. They're called Walter Panther. That's the weirdest name for a hard drive. Walter Panther on Amazon. They are significantly the cheapest drive on there. I don't know if they're any good. 16 terabyte drives right now for $169, which, you know, getting that $10 a terabyte type thing, it's been hard to do. So I've been looking at them. With here in the U.S., Mark, with the tariffs, hard drive prices went up pretty quick. So the 30 or 40% tariffs that were kind of promised are being kind of built into the price here. I don't know if I'd buy hard drives right now here in the U.S. I think I'd hold off a little bit. I think maybe we might see those prices come back.
I was lucky. I bought mine 6 months ago.
Yeah, no, right on. Listen, I bought a handful, maybe 3 or 4 10 terabyte drives. Got them for $100. Like, this is a good deal. I thought, okay, this is the time to do it. And then and then January happened. so not so good anymore. Hard drives are a little bit expensive, but We got some great shows coming up for you. Join us live. Appreciate that. Of course, the averageguy.tv platform, both web and media hosting, powered by Maple Grove Partners. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people that you know and you trust. I need to schedule Christian to get back on here. He had a baby. Well, his wife had a baby. But he had a baby, and he's been taken. We've been giving him some time off. I'll get him scheduled to come back. But if you need some hosting, he does just about anything. Check it out today, maplegrovepartners.com. Neil, thanks for sending me a note the other day. You can as well. I hadn't heard from Neil in a while, and he heard me shout out his name on the podcast, and he said, hey, I'm still here. I'm okay. Love to hear from you as well. Send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv. I'd like to hear from you. What's working? What's not working? What do you want to hear about? You kind of, listen, if you've been around a while, you kind of know how this show works. So send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv. Check in with me every once in a while. We are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. No, 7 p.m. Central. 9, no, I can't even say it. 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. I've been saying that the other way for 1,000 years. At theaverageguy.tv/live. If you're listening to the live show, thanks for coming out. We'll be around for a little bit of a post show. With that, we'll say goodbye, everybody.